accession number 2008, reel 3.
Dennis Wybrow, reel 3.
We went to a place, town Staffordshire. We didn't stay there long, about a month, I suppose, and then we moved into Wellingborough, North Ants. I was stationed in St Barnabas Hall, near the church, in St Barnabas Road. And we went out on schemes, various schemes from them, and carried on training, because the wireless sets in those days, I forget what numbers sets they were. Once you got round the corner or anywhere, you couldn't, you was out of thing me, you know, out of communication. And then gradually they got Crusader tanks and number 11 sets, you know, EK Cole made them, I think. They always had EK Cole on them.
Did you have a specific role?
Oh yeah, I was a driver operator. Also a gunner. You had to do everything, you know, you was a crew commander and all. You was always trained to do the whole thing in a tank, you know. You got to take over if somebody was out.
So when did you receive the tank? Was your first
tank? Well, I was 1941, that would be the end of 41.
And were you based at Wellingborough?
Yeah, in Wellingborough, and in the main park, their park, Wellingborough Park, we turned it into a tank lager, you know, and we used to keep tanks in there. We had these Covenanters, they're the first ones we had, and then it were Crusaders, weren't they? The ones with the five-man a five-man crew, you know. There's a co-driver and a gunner beside driver.
But you received the Covenanter first?
Covenanters first. They weren't very successful. The Crusaders weren't very successful. They were terrible tanks.
What was the problems
terrible
with them?
Oh, the problems. We used to get, I mean, you'd be going along and change gear, because it was all crash gearbox. And then, like, you had a W clutch and everything, and you were kind of went into put it in the gear rather heavy. You finished up with the gear stick in your hand, you know, and it'd break off. And the brake drums at the back used to seize up. The brakes used to seize on. You get going, and all of a sudden, every smoke coming everywhere. Well, the natural thing you done was get a fire extinguisher and spray on it. Of course, the brake drums had cracked to bits. Then you was in trouble. I mean, they were. I think they had Bedford Meadows engines in them, I think. I think it was a Bedford Meadows engine, an old aircraft engine for the 1418 war, you know, the model. I suppose they just put it into production. And then we sent to us. We were the 9th Armoured Division then. They formed the 9th Armoured Division, and we was 28th Armoured Brigade. And we had these tanks, I suppose, and we used to take them out, do training on them and all things like that. And then there was a Centaur and another one. They brought a Centaur. That was a bit better tank. And then the other one had a Rolls-Royce engine in it. I forget what it was. But they were streets ahead of the Centaur. Of course, the colonels and majors, all that, they popped up ones with the Rolls engine in them. When we went on screams, they used to do the tally-ho business, follow me. Of course, we used to But you're going flat out and you couldn't keep up with them. And they got about another 10 mile an hour and there was coming over the air, keep up, keep up, keep up. Of course they could go miles with these tanks, but all the rest of us were struggling. I remember we was out on the scheme once and they always lived in the old days of cavalry, you know. And kind of doing this charge at the end of the scheme, like, and the colonel was shouting about keeping up, or the major was on about keeping up with him. Of course, he was about 300 or 400 yards ahead of us in about a few minutes, and he was going over the radio. Of course, we was going along as fast as we could, and all of a sudden we hit a little brick wall like that. Of course, the whole tank went up in the air, and we all finished up with bruises and cuts, and lying half unconscious in the bloody tank. I mean, that was ridiculous. But I can see it now. But that's the way things went.
So, did you have techniques that you were learning to operate as a group of tanks together?
Oh yes, we used to carry out exercises, troop formations, squadron formations. Oh yeah, I mean, you see, the 9th Armoured Division was formed for the specific purpose of giving the tank training. Of course, Major General Horrocks was the divisional commander. And the Brigadier was Lumsden, Brigadier General was Lumsden. And of course, we had, as soon as they got anything new, like in tanks, at divisional level, they'd carry out schemes at divisional level, you know. They carried out some very big schemes during the war, all over the country, I mean, we used to move. And of course, they were trying out these tanks for battle worthiness and for you know, to see how long they'd last. You know, that's mostly what they were trying to do, get a reliable tank. And I don't think they did. Well, we'll get to that later.
So you had a succession of different tanks, the Covington and then the Crusaders and then the Centaur.
And then the Centaurs, and I can't think of what the other one that was, something like a Centaur.
Cromwell?
No, the Cromwells come out on invasion time, didn't they? That was a prototype, I should say, of the Cromwell, because it had the Rolls-Royce engine in it. And the Cromwells had Rolls-Royce engines. But I never got into the Cromwells. That's another story.
Yeah. So you mentioned the troop formations. How would you form up in the troop?
Well, it's four tanks to a troop. You do your drill, even on the ground, in troop formations, you know. Form Trident and form Two Deep, that means one forward and two back is a trident, I think, and form to deep was the opposite way, and then you see, what you don't realise is that the signalling in them days, the wireless sets were absolutely rubbish, really, for communication between tanks, until we got the 19s there. And they used to do flags, you see, to direct your tanks. You could direct the tanks with the flags and all that business. We had to do lamp flag as a wireless operator. You had to do lamp flag and wireless, Morse code, the whole lot as a wireless operator. You also had to drive and be able to load and fire the gun.
So when you had to use the flags, would you get out of the tank to use the flags?
Well, they had different coloured flags. They had action flags, what I could remember, But the flags, what we used for communication, was done like the Boy Scouts, you know, dot dash. We had to do so many words a minute at it and be able to read it, you see. Same with lamp. You had to do that to you pass your operators. And then you had to read, I think, words. I don't know how many words a minute, 15 or 20 words a minute on Morse. I think, I don't know whether it was 20 words I was a class 3 operator, and then I got upgraded. I went in for the exams and got upgraded to a class 2 operator. I think it was about 20 words a minute. I can't remember now. But I was a class 2 operator, I know.
Had you formed a crew that you were specially with at that point?
Yeah, well, as you see, I was in the crew when we went to Wellingborough, I got appendicitis. And I had to go in the hospital on the old operation. Our MO wasn't in Wellingborough at the time. I don't know where he was. So they had to take me to the 1519th Hussars MO at Rushington. So I had to go in the ambulance all the way to Rushington. See the MO. He said, yes, you've got appendicitis. We'll have to get that out quick. He said, he phoned up Wellingborough Hospital. I had to come right the way back from Wellingborough Hospital. But 8 o'clock at night this was. And the ambulance blokes were wanting to get out on the night out, so they just chucked me out at Wellingborough Park Hospital in the foyer light. I sat there and his sister came up and said, what are you doing here? I said, I've been left here, I'll come here. You're Mr. Wybrow, are you? Oh, Trooper Wybrow, she said. We've been waiting for you. She said, no, I'll give me an address in Norfolk, because I was sitting there. I couldn't do nothing else. And they took me in, you know, and give me a thing there. They put this mask over my face and asked me to count. And I was counting, you know, and I counting away, and apparently somebody must have looked into my eyes to see if I'd gone under. I didn't know this at the time. But there was this bloke with a big black beard. I thought, good God, I'm in the next world, you know. That's the last thing I remember. I did. And when I come round next morning, I was that bad. Of course, the ether or whatever they give me made me sick and terrible. And I said to this little nurse coming up beside, I don't know, I must have died last night. She said, what do you mean? Well, the last thing I can remember before going into a kind of a tunnel was this bloke with a big black beard. Oh, she said, you'll see him later today. He's the bloke that operated. And he was a German Jew on asylum in this country. He took me a appendix out. And I swore, you know, until I saw him, and then when I saw him the next day, they all had a laugh, ain't I? I said, I thought I'd died. Well, anyway, I got over that, and I went to a convalescent home about a fortnight later. They wouldn't let you out of bed for a fortnight in them days. They had a donkey under your knees, and the nurses come in and washed you and all this and that. I was out of paraphernalia. I couldn't get out of bed. Well, anyway, when they did get out of bed after a fortnight, I stood up, thought I was going to walk off. God blimey, I did feel bad. I was dizzy and everything. It took me about half an hour to really get on my feet. Of course, The main thing I wanted to do was get to the toilet. Until you've been in bed for a fortnight on bedpans and all that. Of course, anyway, that's beside the point. I went to this convalescent home after a fortnight, and that was Lady Brofjord's place at Ashton Wold, and I think that was run by the Canadians mostly, the Red Cross, and we was in there, and the Honourable Miss Mills was one of the nurses. Now, she was Churchill's niece. And I got very friendly with her, because she was a big woman, damn sight older than me. She was a game old girl, she drank well. And we got friendly with them. We wasn't allowed in the pubs round about there, because they wouldn't allow any convalescent soldiers in the pubs. So we walked across the field, I don't know where it was, and we ended up in some little old bloke's kitchen, what was come pub, in some little place. Of course, we had a drink or two, and by the time we walked back, somebody had told them. Of course, we got called over the coals. I remember this old Canadian sister who was in charge. She'd done a terrible... I was getting better, we were all getting better, what we're like convalescent, and she told us to give us a terrible thing. Anyway, next day we were drilling the nurses with the brooms up the boards, you know. Of course, their bedroom, we got about the bedrooms of this place, we got 8 or 9 beds in it, you know, and the nurses were in there dusting. Of course, we was having a bit of fun with them, and we started drilling them with the brooms, you know. And the sister walked in, God, God alone. Of course, in them days, the sister was like an RSM in the regiment, and they couldn't tolerate anything out of the normal routine. All the beds had to be folded and made this way and that way and all that. Of course, she caught us messing about with you. Anyway, after a few months, I got posted there. I got better, and they posted me up to the Holden Regiment. It was a 56th Strain Regiment. I had to go right up to Catterick again. Met an old major. That was D Squadron. There was no D Squadrons in any regiment I went into, but I wondered why it was. That was a Holden Squadron. And he said... When we arrived there, I arrived with another bloke. He said, don't think you're nobody's babies, because you're mine, he said. So I thought, I'm going to write one here. Anyway, one of the blokes was going back to the regiment, and I knew the regimental Sergeant Bowman, who was in charge of the orderly room in the regiment. I knew him quite well. And I said, for Christ's sake, get him to put an application in for me to get out of here, I said. So about a week later, I got posted back to the regiment, and then I went to regiment headquarters. And that's when I got friendly with Beckley, because I was in the same troop as him.
So when was this, roughly?
Oh, 43. I got Ted Beckley and Ken, what's his name?
Marriott.
Ken Marriott. We was all in the same troop together. And they set up an ACAC troop then, and we had ACAC tanks. Now, what the devil were they? They were like the Covenanters, only a twin, not both, as Orligans, twin Orligans on them, and they had power turret, you know. The twin Orligans were a fantastic thing, but I was mostly loading, and if you tried to lift a magazine up of about, I don't know, somewhere about 60 pounds, it must be an easy 60 pound, and lift that up inside the turret with the guns beside you and the magazines there. You've got to get the other one off and lift that up.
So what was the setup in the tank? How was the tank set up?
Well, it was just set up with the twin Oerlikon guns in it. Not Oerlikon, what did I say they were?
Oerlikons.
They were Oerlikons. Bofors, you never get twin Bofors in there. They were cannons, about 50.5-inch shells.
Had the turret been removed? Had the turret been removed from the tank?
No, the turret, you was in the turret, and the tanks were, the guns were mounted in the turret, so you could go up and down and round and round. Oh, yeah, powered turrets. But then they done away with all them.
So was that 43 and 44?
Yeah, and I think they took them, course of the V2s. They took them off us. And took them out at the coast to shoot the V2s off us. So they didn't take the cruise, we didn't have that luck. Well, I don't know whether it's luck or something. Luck has come along. Then I got posted to Brigade Headquarters, 28th Armour Brigade.
Was there any techniques that you had to learn with the anti-aircraft tanks?
Oh, yeah, we had to learn the aircraft recognition. We had to learn to, load the magazines and everything out. Oh, yeah, we had to do all the techniques. We had to do a lot of aircraft. Oh, I passed an Agnes course, actually.
So what did that involve?
Well, it involved the tanks, aircraft recognition, trying to hit a moving target, providing it went too fast. Because I didn't, we carried out drills with Spitfires just north of Newcastle, north of Morpeth, on the A12 there was an aerodrome there. And we used to go into the domes where they had the, where they trained their aircraft gunners for thing. Of course, they put these films of planes at the actual speed they come in on these domes. And you was in there on the gun. And as you fired the gun, they could see where you fired because they were standing behind. And as this aircraft come down, you've got to fire off to hit it, and boy, when you see them planes coming at you, they come from all angles. You see, you don't know where they're coming from. You might have to go right the way round because it's in a dome. You might have to go right the way round to get on it, but that time the plane's gone. Or if you was coming from the side and you actually got on him, you'll be about to put aside behind him. It's just, that's when I realised that unless something was coming straight at you or going very slow, you weren't going to bring them down. That was my effort into the ACAT gunnery. I passed the course, but I don't know how.
So when did the regiment move from Wellingborough?
We used to go out for May, so we never stayed there all the while. That was just a place where we used to come back to. Of course, in the summertime, we used to go out to Thetford, Brandon and all that place. We'd be out there for 4 or 5 months. And then we'd come back doing schemes, various schemes, go back to Wellingborough. And then we'd go up to... Well, we went up to Northumberland, the last place I was at. When I was at Brigade Headquarters, we was up Rothbury, Morpeth. I was at Brigade Headquarters, I can't know, Linden Hall, Long Horsley, where the regiment was. But I was at Brigade Headquarters, was near Morpeth, Midford Hall. And while we was there, of course, the previous owners had been commandos, but apparently that wasn't, the course there wasn't hard enough for the commandos, so they took them up somewhere up in Scotland, I believe. But the course was there, and of course, and there was some bright spark who was, I don't know whether he'd been an instructor and left behind. So everybody got to do this commando course. You never see such a racket there. Of course, they started us off on this thing here, you know. They didn't tell us a thing about how to do it. And they started us off the first day. Well, we got over some of the objects and fell off poles and ropes and God knows what. We went round this course, I reckon, that I should say it took us about 2 or 3 hours to get round this course. Absolutely exhausting. And 90% of us, you know, never done anything like it, like a commando. And then they said the next day, you'd be on parade the next day. So we went on parade for it again the next day. And this bloke chap showed us how to get round that course. And of course, we got to go round with full kit on in the end and fire the ammunition. Although we was tanks, they were going to do it, you know. We were going to be in tanks. So anyway, the next day they showed us how to get over the obstacles. And by God, that, and the next day after that was 100% we could get through it, get over it, get down them. By the end of the week, he said, you know, we was doing it every day, about an hour, hour and a half, a couple of hours. The end of the day, then they put speed on at the end of the week. And you've got to do it in a certain time to pass the course. And, you know, most of us, I think all but one, passed that course. And it was only by him telling you how to get over a rope, over a river. You know, you've seen them do it, haven't you? Where they put the rope under your knee, left leg hold and pull you across. Well, I used to have a big knot in this rope across this river, and that was deep. And of course, when we got used to it, the instructor would stand at the other end, waggling, to make sure you didn't do it. If you got underneath, if you fell underneath and tried to go over, you was finished. As long as you kept on top with your leg down, you could get across. And we all done it in the end. We got across and able to lift our leg over the knot in the rope and carry on, in spite of them pulling it. I don't know how it's done, but we done it.